All right, thanks. And now, Chris Breen.
Thank you. I would also like to acknowledge that we're meeting on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, which was never ceded. Brad's argument is essentially that to get the ALP elected, it has to accept turnbacks, and this might lead to minor improvements for refugees. But a humanitarian refugee policy can't be achieved by lessening or trading off recognised refugee rights. It is naive to think that you can win concessions by capitulation, and it is capitulation. The Australian newspaper rightly summed up Richard Miles and Bill Shorten's recent preemption of ALP conference, saying it's a final capitulation to Tony Abbott's hardline policy on stopping boatloads of asylum seekers. Brad says that every step in the right direction changes lives, but we are seeing the ALP leaders trying to take a step in the wrong direction. There are, however, others in the ALP, and I agree with them, who have concluded that it's better to have principles, to fight for those principles and lose an election, than to capitulate in the hope of winning. And though in any case, for all Abbott's talk of stopping the boats, he is still behind in the polls. Shorten did not have to make this recent announcement of a shift to the right. The right to seek asylum is a cornerstone of refugee rights enshrined in the 1951 Refugee Convention. Boat turnbacks deny that lawful right to seek asylum. They are part of a package of brutal deterrence, along with offshore processing, deportations and mandatory detention. Rather than leading to improvements for refugees, for the ALP to accept boat turnbacks would be to accept yet another violation of asylum seekers' rights, adding to the weight of bipartisan cruelty. Accepting turnbacks would be a victory for electoral opportunism, a victory for fear and demonisation, and deterrence over hope, compassion and justice. I want to move to talk about the horrendous reality of turnbacks and what they actually mean. Turnbacks have led to drownings, fires, sinkings, disappearance and jailings. Boats have washed ashore in uninhabited jungle and people have had to walk for days without food in Indonesia before getting assistance. 8 people are known to have died from boat turnbacks since 2001. For instance, we have a speaker, Mohammed Bakiri, who's speaking at a rally outside the ALP National Conference tomorrow. He's an Afghan refugee who came here as a 10-year-old child. He was on a boat that was turned back by the Howard government. On that boat, to avoid being turned back, asylum seekers cut the fuel lines. This caused a fire on the boat. People had to jump into the water. There were 2 women who died doing that. As a 10-year-old child, he saw their bodies float past him. He was then held on Nauru for 3 years before he was finally accepted as a refugee. Who would do that to a child for a handful of boats? Asylum seekers don't want to be turned back, and turnbacks therefore require violence. Whether that's the Navy burning people's hands on the boat engines, whether it's multiple reports of people being pushed, kicked and punched into orange lifeboats. For instance, there was one recent report an asylum seeker, Mr. Dar, told the Age newspaper that he was turned around on a boat that included pregnant women, babies and children who were denied medical aid. He says, they were forced into a small orange boat. The boat is like a grave, he said. They were neck to neck and knee to knee, all people one by one vomiting. Or the most recent turnback, where the Australian government paid people smugglers and put asylum into 2 new boats. They subsequently hit a reef and sank. The local head of the People Smuggling Division in Indonesia told The Age that sending 65 asylum seekers back to Indonesia on 2 boats with just 1 drum of fuel each was akin to a suicide mission. He asked, where is the humanity? If the boats had hit a reef and been stranded off Landu Island at high tide, it would have been too dangerous for the rest of the locals to rescue them. And this is the reality of what the ALP leaders, and now sadly Brad, is asking us to accept. There is currently a boatload of asylum seekers, of Vietnamese asylum seekers, held by the Navy, the Australian Navy, on the high sea. Abbott wants to return them to their persecutors. The last boatload of 46 Vietnamese asylum seekers forced back included democracy activists and persecuted Christians. Many of those who were returned by the Abbott government have been repeatedly interrogated. At least one has been jailed and the others face jail. Richard Miles, Bill Shorten, even Brad here has not said whether or not Labor should or would directly refoul those refugees. And I guess perhaps even more horrid is where the policy leads. We recently saw the horrific game of ping pong with dehydrated and starving Rohingya refugees, Rohingya asylum seekers being turned back to sea at gunpoint by Malaysia, Thailand and Indonesia. This was encouraged by the Abbott government. And this was, make no mistake about it, a death policy. There were up to 200 of the Rohingya reported to have died, mostly from dehydration at sea. Australia's turn-back policy has always been a go-and-die-somewhere-else policy, and this is what played out in the Malacca Straits. We also get told constantly that this is the turn-backs are needed to save lives. But this is a lie. If the Navy can find boats to turn them around, then they can find boats with their $2 billion radar system to assist them. The reality is that in the past, asylum seekers have been allowed to die. There was the boat Civ 358, that there was a coroner's court because they actually picked up the bodies. Most times they don't because they try to avoid the legal consequences. And the coroner found that after 16 distress calls were made over 2 days by asylum seekers, that was dismissed as refugee patter. Those people drowned. I used to argue that it was the politics that meant there was negligence at the heart of the rescue authorities. But more recently, there were three Navy personnel on ABC TV and radio who have told of boats that they were on with getting orders from Canberra not to rescue boats that were in Indonesian water, not to rescue a boat on Australia Day, and people on those boats drowned. And they say they find it difficult to sleep as a result. Brad also argues that turnbacks would be okay if not shrouded in secrecy, or he has in other forums, if there was an improved regional process with the UNHCR. But brutality is built into the logic of deterrence. There is no way, for instance, that the ALP is going to have an independent guardian for children or off-site on overshore processing. There is a regional solution which currently exists, according to Bill Shorten, and he says explicitly it's Manus Island and Nauru. And in those places, there is still no safe or permanent resettlement for refugees. Regional processing, resettlement is simply a euphemism or bureaucratic speak for Australia outsourcing its refugee responsibility onto poorer neighbours, but not accepting or taking refugees. In any case, there is no problem with processing. Refugees are already processed by the UNHCR in Indonesia. The problem is that Australia won't take any of those processed refugees. So, for instance, at the end of last year, there were 4,270 recognised refugees by the UNHCR in Indonesia, 6,916 asylum seekers. But Abbott currently has a ban on taking any of those refugees from Indonesia. Even under Labor, the amount taken in the last decade was a trickle. Australia doesn't even accept UNHCR judgments if people make it here by boat. They get processed again. And so I think we need an Australian solution where Australia takes the refugees currently in Indonesia. There is never an excuse to close the ocean passage on desperate people who are seeking our assistance. The Navy could easily perform rescue missions instead of turnbacks. Or if politicians were seriously concerned about deaths at sea, they could put the refugees in Indonesia on a plane and bring them here. Taking 10,000 people from Indonesia is not a lot. We take 200,000 permanent migrants every year. And if it sounds utopian, it's exactly what the Australian government has done in the past. In 1968, when Soviet tanks rolled into Czechoslovakia to crush the Prague Spring, within a matter of weeks, the Immigration Department, the Australian government, had chartered a plane to the borders to pick those refugees up. They ended up taking 6,000 of the people who fled. And the only difference between those refugees and the ones in Indonesia is a political question. The ones that Australia decides it wants, the ones it decides it doesn't. And to change that politics, we need to build a movement. And I think at the heart of Brad's strategy is actually the idea that we can't. I mean, he does talk about what will it take to get a permanent solution. I think it means building a movement. For instance, Brad has written that for most Australians, the battle of over offshore processing and asylum seekers is over. It's time for activists like myself to shift our focus, which I think leaves silently unsaid the implication that Abbott has won. And there are two parts to that pessimism. One is about what the major parties will accept. Firstly, he writes that neither major political party will allow the reopening of the boat journey from Java to Christmas Island. And I think the first thing to say about that is that actually the ALP won the 2007 election on a platform of beginning into end the Pacific solution of no offshore processing and no boat turnbacks. No TPVs either. And at that time, shortly after the election, Chris Evans, who was the immigration minister, a member of the Labor left, said that dismantling the Pacific solution was one of my greatest pleasures in politics. Neither human nor fair, the Pacific solution was also ineffective and wasteful. But about a year later, a resurgence in photo rivals saw Labor panic. And because Labor had never been won away at heart from a position of deterrence, that boat arrivals were some sort of problem, its response was to reopen the Pacific solution and eventually the PNG solution and all the horrors that came along with that. And it was at this time, interestingly, that Brad Chilcott was an advisor to Tony Burke. At this point, the ALP went from hope to despair. Kevin Rudd had a chance to dismantle the whole brutal logic of deterrence and didn't take that. And the so-called clever politics of implementing coalition's policies, of trying to neutralise the issue, didn't help Rudd at that election, which he subsequently lost. And so I think the chief lessons of the Rudd-Gillard Labor government ought not be lost on refugee advocates. Without a fundamental break from the anti-boat hysteria, without saying that we will welcome boats, that we will say let them land, let them stay, I think that Labor will again reach for border brutality. The second part of Brad's pessimism is that we can't shift public opinion. And again, he writes, history polling and other research shows us the public will not tolerate the perception of uncontrolled borders. Yet as long as the boats have stopped and our borders are secure, the majority of Australians remain indifferent to the injustice being visited upon the men, women and children in our care. To the extent that the Australian people remain indifferent, a large part of the responsibility lies with the ALP. And now, at least the ALP leadership, telling them to remain indifferent. That is the message that accepting turnbacks and offshore processing sends. It is a message that the ALP sadly has been sending for the last two decades, from the silence over Tampa to exercising the whole of Australia from the Migration Act to saving offshore processing from High Court challenge to most recently passing the Border Force Act to silence doctors and teachers speaking out about what they witness in detention. When the two major parties agreed, where else do people get their information from? And actually, this is one of the successes of the program which is about to start next week, Go Back to Where You Come From. No matter what prejudices people come to, when they are confronted with the reality, they are turned around again and again and again. And we can turn around public opinion. The fact is, despite the ALP, we have shifted public opinion in the past, and the refugee rights movement is growing again. The refugee movement under John Howard won public opinion. Between 2001 and 2004, the number of people who thought that all or some asylum boats should be allowed to land went from 47 to 61%. This was in a news poll that asked the same question year after year. And at the moment, there's probably hard support for refugees is around 30%, but it really depends on what questions you ask. For instance, there was a recent Essential poll in April that found of over 1,000 people, 49% agreed asylum seekers arriving by boat should be allowed to stay in Australia if they are found to be genuine refugees. More importantly still, I think, is that our movement is growing. 15,000 people turned out to this year's Palm Sunday rally. The number of organisations and institutions backing the rally close to doubled, from unions to church groups. And new refugee rights groups are springing up all the time, from grandmothers to refugees to rural groups. And all of this has been done despite the ALP. Imagine how we could shift public opinion if the ALP leaders stood up and led and stood up to Abbott's lies on refugees rather than meekly mimicking them. Finally, Brad has written, Australia then faces endless elections fought over asylum seekers who will continue to endure the devastating policy outcomes of the ensuing race to the bottom. We can't afford to fight another election over refugee politics. But no matter what policy Labor accepts, the election will involve the issue of boats and Tony Abbott's claim that he has stopped the boats because he's put it front and centre of Australian politics. Rudd failed to neutralise the issue by opening Manus and declaring the PNG solution. There is always further to the right that Abbott is prepared to go. And so the boat turn backs would fail in exactly the same way. You cannot stop the race to the bottom by joining it. And far from re-energising the politics of fear and vilification, a strong vote against offshore detention, a strong vote against boat turnbacks at the National ALP conference, and more vocal Labor politicians and leaders willing to stay, say, let them land, let them stay, could begin a bipartisan break with refugee cruelty. On the other hand, Brad's strategy would take all this building pressure off the ALP and cede large amounts of political ground to the coalition. Richard Marles and Bill Shorten have tried to put pressure on the ALP delegates by preempting conference debates and showing their contempt in the process for ALP democratic processes, which is why a fight within the ALP tomorrow is so important. I think every refugee advocate needs to be outside the ALP conference at 12 p.m. at the refugee rights rally, urging those inside to push for real change, starting with closing Manus and Nauru, ending mandatory detention and opposing boat turnbacks, but not stopping until refugee deterrence is in the dustbin of history. And if the vote tomorrow is against turnbacks, that will give the movement an enormous boost of confidence. On the other hand, if there is a vote for turnbacks, the movement is not going to go quiet for Labor. We will fight an ALP government with turnbacks and offshore processing every bit as hard as we have fought the coalition. Thank you.